Yeah, what a crap. Okay, as was said already, I'm Pekka Skorremas from Finland, and I'm a professor at the Aalto University. The Aalto University in Helsinki began 4 years ago. It was a merger of the historical University of Technology, University of Art and Design, and the Helsinki Business School, mixing together business, technology, art, design, and architecture. And I'm a professor there, and the vice dean of the whole school. I'm not an architect or designer, I come from humanities. I have a PhD in history of art and architecture from the University of Helsinki. Then I studied research and worked as a professor in the US for several years in Philadelphia and Chicago. And that's about it. And I have been mostly writing on architecture, but in the last 5 or 10 years more about design. I actually published a history book of English design a couple of years ago, which will come to your library. It was published in Beijing last year in Chinese. And now Victoria and Albert Museum is producing a global edition of the same book for the Frankfurt Book Fair. So, first obstacle, technology. Yeah, it's up there. Yes, thank you. Well, it's great to be here because before last May, I had never been to Lithuania. I've been a lot in Tallinn, of course, and Riga, and so on, and Warsaw. But never here, but I was here last May, and then I was again here, actually giving a talk from the same place. Why is it doing this? Better like this? No? And then I came back again in October, and now again, so it's my third time in 1 year. It's a highly interesting city, and tomorrow I have been promised to take to I'll get to the suburbs to see more. So what I'm going to speak about now in the last next 50 minutes, control freak is a control freak, is the time span is from about 1900 to the 1960s. And first we start from Helsinki, then we move across the bay to Tallinn. From there we take the road to Riga, and then we finally end up in Vilnius, or Vilna, as we say in Finland. And a couple of core concepts that I would like to kind of burn in the back in your heads. I discussed these issues with the famous Polish art historian Jana Biewostocki in the 80s, because he had worked a lot with these ideas of what is the center, periphery, and province. Well, the center is quite evident, you know, if you think about the beginning of the 20th century, the center was Berlin. For Finland, the center was Stockholm and St. Petersburg, and of course Paris, Vienna, etc., etc. Dominating centers, radiating their influence far away across the borders. And then, of course, a province is basically a kind of negative expression, because province is usually dominated by one center and basically absorbs in a kind of transformed way kind of inventions or innovations from the big centers. Several cities in the Austro-Hungarian kingdom were promises regarding Vienna with this incredible, radiant new architecture around 1900. Helsinki used to be a province taking most of its ideas from Berlin. But then the idea of the periphery, which is my kind of key concept here, because periphery is basically not a negative, does not have a negative connotation per se. Why is that? Because periphery can take ideas and innovations from multiple centers. So periphery can be creative, it can be innovative, it's not obedient to one dominating center. And as I'm going to show you, Helsinki was very much this kind of innovative periphery from the years 1900 onwards. And of course the kind of weight, what is a center, what is a province, what is a periphery, of course that shifts and changes, you know, throughout the history. The center may fall down to be a province, and we have, you know, history is full of these examples. Some provinces or peripheries rise to be centers, so it's a kind of endless game of influences criss-cross. But I think this is a very good tool base to think about the architecture in Finland and the Baltic countries, because they display the, all these three characteristics. So this is a contemporary map, but anyways, now second chance. There's supposed to come some red light from this thing. No? Come on, Mr. Petal. Right. Now, so we are speaking about mostly about these regions here. Helsinki, Tallinn, Riga, and then we come down to And of course when we start our journey from around 1900 from Finland. Now one common thing is that all these countries were a part of the Romanov Empire around 1900. So that's one common denominator. And Helsinki of course used to be very receptive for the ideas of Stockholm, not from St. Petersburg since the classical times. And then Berlin of course was the place where Finnish architects got their education up to the late 19th century. Vienna, not Paris so much, but the German-speaking world was the kind of main impulse giver. And I don't know how much you know about architectural history, but probably quite much. If you think about the kind of mode or the scene of architecture around 1890s, in the whole Europe, not only in Helsinki, and of course the last part of the 1890s was this time of this tremendous rise of the young generation, like, you know, the Secession in Vienna and many others, but at the same time of strong nationalist currents, nationalist or patriotic, whatever. And those were especially felt in those areas that were part of the big empires of the Romanovs or the Habsburgs, or otherwise suppressed. Gaudí in Catalonia, Benny McIntosh in Scotland, the Gudelaar community in, in Hungary, the local architecture of Karl Koskaroli in Transylvania, the Zakopane style in Transylvania, and so on. And also in Finland, of course, because of the Tsarist oppression, the culture was one of the few elements you could use to express your national wish to be something peculiarly Finnish. Not Swedish, not Russian, not Finnish. Political action was forbidden. So the whole cultural life, the music of Jean Sibelius, painting, literature, novels, craft, design, and architecture, from this kind of movement in trying to create the cultural attributions that are regional. Regional meaning something which could be called Finnish. And in architecture, of course, that meant the abandonment of the typical idiom of the late 19th century, New Baroque, New Renaissance, New Gothic, New Rococo, then going into something like this. So the European currents, Art Nouveau in Belgium, Session in Vienna, and many others, came to Finland in the 1890s. So that's how kind of the fashionable architecture of the late 1890s, stripped surfaces, no straight historical references to Baroque or Renaissance. It's kind of modern European young architecture. And now when I say young, it's really important to remember that the whole new generation in Europe was about from the same age, coming from the schools of architecture in the mid-1890s, McIntosh, Behrens, Olbrich, Hoffmann, etc. They all belong to the same generation, as well in Finland. And in Finland, the architectural education had begun in the 1870s, and now actually in the 1890s, the first kind of fully-fledged generation of architects, Finnish architects, educated in Finland, came to business. And as a backdrop for the whole Europe, excluding Vilnius, there was a strong economic boom from the late 1890s to the beginning of the First World War. Immense level of urbanization, railway building, transport, industries, which brought lots of fresh capital to the market, which was used in building investments, which of course meant lots of opportunities for the young radical architects. That in Finland, and for example in Riga, joined their forces with the new economic elite, the young upper middle class, and shared with them the kind of wish for this patriotic Finnish or local or regional expression. So in a very good way, talented young architects, fresh ideas, fresh money, and a new middle class somehow found each other. And because the economy was in such a speed, it meant that in a couple of years, lots were built, for example, in Helsinki, in a very short time period. But then to Paris, 1900, that is the birthplace of Finnish design, you might say, because this is on the Paris World Fair 1900, the Finnish pavilion by the architects Gesellius, Lindgren, Saarinen, a kind of fresh mix of some historical motifs, just whim, kind of pagoda style, but certainly something that said this architecture comes from a very specific area in Europe, the northernmost corner of Europe, Ultima Thule, Finland. And the pavilion was highly applauded by the French press. Art of France wrote a great article in Le Figaro about it. And overnight, Finnish architecture design became somehow known outside the borders of Finland. First time ever. And there it has been since that. Just the interior, you see this kind of... It's about to say that Gaudí did in Catalonia, it's kind of this pseudo-medieval, it's not copying medieval forms, but it goes back to medieval themes, vaultings, murals, from the Finnish epic collection of poems, Kalevala. But anyway, so, of course, what is typical to Finland, or I think many other countries, is that nemo profeta in patriam suam. Nobody is a prophet in his own country. You have to prove that you're something abroad. Then you can come back home. And then the same people say, oh, God, you're great. That's still happening. So, Gesellius, Lindgren, Saarinen, Lars Sonck, many others kind of came before in the late 1900s. Just some examples, apartment block in Helsinki, in Katajanokka area from 1901 by Gesellius, Lindgren, Saarinen, The Saarinen is, of course, the famous Elia Saarinen, not Eero Saarinen. Showing this kind of new way to, you know, drop the historical weight of Baroque and Renaissance and let the kind of shape of the rooms, the adorations of rooms, kind of express themselves in the exterior. And of course, same time, striving that to the picturesque, you know, breaking the grid of the city plan, providing some kind of interesting vistas and views. And almost overnight, Finnish architecture began to be published in, for example, in Germany, in Moderne Bauformen, and some other journals, especially Gesellius Lindgren Saarinen, but also Lars Sonck. And suddenly, you know, new Finnish architecture, you know, they just wanted to be modern. The modern Finnish architecture became this kind of almost like a small hit in Central Europe, very well known. And of course, but the clients knew that the architects were famous also in the big centers of Europe, of course, that, you know, brought status for their own living too. But again, this kind of, you know, sort of medieval way to go back to architecture of Finnish medieval castles. But as I said, not copying, just kind of referential, twisted, bent, gothic, archaic use of the Finnish granite, the hard stone. It's a decorative element. I'm sorry, part of the slides are not the quality which I usually require, but I can't help. And then, of course, business was growing fast. Banks, insurance companies, they were all commissioning new buildings. And, of course, at that time, there was no income tax. So when these young architects, you know, got these commissions to build banks and insurance companies and national museums and theaters, they really cashed in. This is insurance building in central Helsinki next to the department store Stockmann, by Gesellius Lindgren Saarinen in 1900, which was really this kind of perhaps the most outrageous, you know, to the force of, you know, throw away all previous models and then try to create something totally new. Of course, the use of Finnish stone. But these buildings are not stone buildings. They are brick buildings which are covered with stone. Because of the Finnish climate, you can't have stone buildings. You freeze to death. But they look like stone buildings. So instead of, you know, lions, we have bears and wolves. And I can't see here. And here there's a frieze of squirrels and pine nuts. Not laughing. These are whole things for me. And this kind of, you know, humoristic, grotesque heads. And of course, all these buildings were, they were written about in daily press. Of course, they brought lots of publicity to the building. This building is called Pohjola, the North, by the name, name of the insurance company. And as I said, the transformation of the classical vocabulary is evident here. Of course, instead of double Corinthian columns, you have two pine trees going together here. And I said bears, kind of grotesque, almost Romanesque figures, medievalistic, not medieval, but medievalistic arches and so. So this truly became something that was then referred to as modern Finnish architecture. As I said, modern Finnish architecture. Not derived from one center. So here we have the creative periphery, which I, or innovative periphery, which I referred to. This is the studio and home of Gesellius Lindgren and Saarinen, Vitaresk, near Helsinki. Huge compound, we can only see a part of it. The guys built it when they were under 30 years old, with their own salaries. So what do we have here? We have some kind of, you know, voicey kind of chimneys. Again, the medievalist things and the refer, you know, and rose from the bedrock. The shingling surface is not a traditional Finnish way, it's not from East Coast villas of United States, and this absolutely north strive to asymmetry and picturesque effects. It's actually a five-story building, which is difficult to see from here. And inside, just one of the rooms, again, reference to the vernacular timber architecture of Finland, but not copying it. I mean, this kind of living spaces, of course, were not part of the vernacular peasant traditions, just purely modern use of space for socializing and have parties. There's a piano there which Sibelius used to play, and so on. So it's again, as I said, references. Going back to the national past, but not copying, just getting inspired. Some more examples, the National Museum by the same architect, Gesenius Lindgren Saarinen, designed in 1902. In Helsinki, of course. Lars Sonck, Helsinki Telephone Company building 1903. Perhaps the most utmost kind of high song of the kind of use of Finnish, the expressive use of Finnish granite. And again, these are copied from Finnish medieval church gates, but otherwise it's just a mix. These are, you know, basically Egyptian columns. And then some ornamentation that goes to telephone technology here. So again, a mix, kind of fresh mix. And these buildings were very much liked, and they still are liked very much today, because, you know, they brought life to the city. Or the St. John's Church by Sonck in Tampere in Finland. The competition was in 1902. Again, the granite. Yes, it has Gothic features, but no, it's not straight derived from the vocabulary of straightforward Orthodox Gothic architecture. And then 1904, the completion of the new main railway station of Helsinki. The winning entry was, of course, by the maestro Elia Saarinen. Again, the bears there, watching the gate. And this, you know, castle-like appearance. And everybody was happy, okay, now Saarinen has produced one great design. More bat. In the same competition, we had the entry of Sigurd Frosterus, a young architect who had just worked for Henri Mantivelde in Belgium. And this was certainly something different. Frosterus thought that modern urban life has nothing to do with Gothic churches, bears, squirrels, asymmetric pictures effects. And of course this was mocked by the jury, something imported, something not Finnish, something, you know, continental, brouhaha, whatever. But of course Saarinen, as a clever man, understood that, okay, enough of bears. So this kind of great period of this, what we today call national romantic architecture, that was phrased in the 1930s. It was never called national romantic architecture in 1900. It was just modern Finnish architecture. Anyway, so this kind of, you know, stopped like, actually 4 years of that movement, but it produced a lot of public and private buildings, because the building boom in Helsinki and Finland and Turku and Tampere and cities in general. So Saarinen very fast changed his design, elaborated, I think this is the last design from 1910, but you know, it was then already, there's the cars coming here. Modern metropolitan architecture, symmetry, sparse detailing, almost aesthetic compared to the previous ones. If you come to Helsinki, you'll go there, it's a great building. The first monumental concrete buildings in Finland are inside. This is a little picture, but anyway, also Lars Sonck, who did this telephone company building. This church competition from 1906. So what do we have here? Absolute mirror symmetry, central axis, away with asymmetry, away with romantic detailing, away with the whole previous vocabulary. Or his stock exchange building from 1910 in Helsinki. And even the surface of the stone is now even, and again, kind of mirror-like symmetry. And this was applauded highly in the Scandinavian press as being the most purist, the more sparse, the most ascetic young architecture that the Nordic countries had produced so far. And inside, the same symmetry, the central axis goes through the whole building, one of the most beautiful interior spaces in Helsinki. Well, I did my PhD on our songs, so I had a warm tone in my voice. So that kind of was this kind of cycle of things that happened in Finland from 1900 to 1910 or 1413. So of course it was very much followed in the neighboring countries. Of course Sweden and Denmark, they had a very strong architectural culture by themselves, quite different from Finland. But then we had the Baltic provinces, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. So from 1905 to 1916, there was a very strong impact of Finnish architecture in Estonia, mostly in Tallinn, but also in Tartu and the Kaunas. And it was not just a formal attribution or formal influences. Finnish architects actually operated. It's an export of architectural professional expertise in grand scale to Estonia. Because Tallinn was growing fast, it had a big port, banking, business, insurance, industries. But the architecture professor was very weak. The architectural education, in a kind of sincere way, had begun quite late. They used to train their architects in the University of Technology in Riga. So there was kind of a queue who would do all the new buildings for the growing Tallinn. So yes, we had the Finnish architects. And also because Finnish architecture was welcomed, because it was not coming from a big center. They didn't want to have architects from Moscow or Berlin or Stockholm. Finland, a small region, part of the Roman Empire, autonomous, but anyway, was a suitable model. Also because Estonians and Finns are very near each other anyway, the language is almost the same, so it was quite natural in that way. This furniture factory by Gesenius Lindgren Sairen and Luther Lapriki, 1905. Sairen was asked to design the master plan city plan for Greater Tallinn, which is still the basis for the growth of Tallinn. Some showing this kind of, you know, ideas how the new city would look. This is 1911, 1912. Huge, monumental, symmetrical parkways, all like this. I always wonder how Saarinen was able to kind of, you know, have this axonometric way to see the environment as if it actually would exist already. He was a superb draftsman. He began his drawings from the down left-hand corner, worked through the drawing to the upper right-hand corner, and it was ready. And that was before copy machines or internet or whatever modern stuff. Tallinn organized a competition for the new town hall in 1912. Several things took part. This is just one of the entries. I think it became third. And the winner was, guess who? Saarinen, of course. So the winner takes it all. But of course, sadly, the First World War broke out in 1914. And none of these grand schemes became reality. But something still, like this, the Kreditbank building by Saarinen, 1912-13, still there, in great shape, as it has been renovated. Armas Lindgren, the former collaborator of Saarinen, his grand theater in Tartu, Theater Vanemuine, which was destroyed in the bombings of Tartu, like almost the whole city. and the great concert for Estonia in Tallinn by Lindgren and a female architect for Finland, Vivi Löf. So the actual imprint of Finnish architects as realized buildings was quite significant in Tallinn and dominated the new construction of the city. But as I said, they were not so interested about how the buildings looked, but it was the kind of architectural expertise that Finns had and Estonians did not have yet. So now we jump a bit ahead, but we still stay on the axis of Helsinki and Tallinn. So then of course we had the First World War and all these things and the bad economy in the 20s. And then in the 1930s when construction picked up in Estonia and in Tallinn, they didn't need Finnish architecture anymore. Why? Because they had a great bunch of young Estonian trained architects to do the job now. Things were not needed. If you go to Tallinn and to the villa area Nomme, outside Tallinn, you see all these incredibly beautiful, well-designed, functionalist or modern Bauhausian villas. So of course the great star of Finnish architecture from in the 1930s was Alvar Aalto. This is sanatorium in Paimio from 1930. So this basically did not exert any influence in Estonia anymore. They did the job themselves. Okay, Saarinen built something, he built a small villa at Tamekan in Tartu, but you know, maybe more one man house. And also Aalto's idiom was so idiosyncratic that it would be very difficult to kind of, you know, copy him or kind of take inspiration from him. Because, that, you know, you could even see where the ideas are coming from. Like his own house and studio in Helsinki from 1936. Pay attention to this curve here, and also to the fact that the architect of the composer's house here in Vilna visited this building in 1959. And I will come to that later. Terrible picture, but anyway. Actually, Aalto won the competition for a new Museum of Modern or Estonian Art in 1937. But due to the Second World War, it was never built. A great design using the same roof window system that they had invented in the Viborg City Library a couple of years before. But then basically Finland got its revenge because when the great art museum Kumu opened about 10 years ago, it was designed by a Finnish architect. And then we jump down a bit more south to Riga. Riga was much more bigger city than Tallinn, the biggest port of the Romanov Empire. Lots of money, lots of, you know, growing, mushrooming. And again there, also the young, you know, young business people, the upper middle class, middle class, they wanted to have new architecture, something which is, you know, regional. Basically the same idea as in Finland. But they had nobody to actually to do it. And here's a different example, because the architects, so the Finnish people did not build much, some of these, in Riga. But the architects in Riga came to Finland to study the Finnish buildings and basically not copied but used a lot of the elements of those buildings I showed you earlier. Why? Because they saw that in Finland we had been able to generate a kind of idiom which can be called local. When I first went to Riga in 1981, never been there, you know, it's very difficult to contain information. I walked around there, I was astonished that, you know, it's almost like being in Helsinki, you know, in Katajok. It's weird, you know. So this is why I think, I remember Alfred Managhs from 1905. And the design basically goes back to the Larsson building in Tampere from 1901. terrible picture. But, and of again, this kind of pseudo-medievalist use of the arches, and of course the coarse stone work. They were all straight imported from Helsinki to Riga. All like this. I have been studying this together with my good colleague Janis Kraskins in Riga. Janis has published a row of good books on the history of Riga architecture, so if you want to know more, just look for him, K. Kraskins, Janis. Finns built some buildings like this by the company Grand Hedman, Vasakärna from 1905. Elias Arvin won some important competitions, but nothing was built, so this is actually the only building designed in Finland and built in Riga. But I could show you like 20 buildings where you can straight see where the ideas have been taken from Helsinki and Finland. But done by local architects. So you might even say that the Finland, or Helsinki, or Finland had grown into a kind of mini-center from a periphery, exerting influence in its neighboring countries, like Estonia, like Latvia. So who do we have here? You should know. Other one of those guys is, sorry, Vytautas Čekanauskas. I don't know which one of those, who knows? There, on the right hand side. Okay? And this is Arne Ervi, the designer of the famous Tapiola suburb near Helsinki. There's a delegation of architects, quite many architects, who came to Finland in 1959 to study modern urban planning and, in general, Finnish modern architecture. And now here I am very sorry that Mrs. Maria Dreimate is not here, because just a couple of days ago, before I was doing the lecture, Karolina Jakaite sent me an article by this female researcher, and I thought that, oh my God, I hope she's not in the audience. Well, she's not, she's somewhere traveling, so. But she has published a very good article about this trip to Finland and the possible influence, not just of Finnish architecture, but of Nordic and Swedish architecture in the 60s in Lithuania. So look for that. You can ask for the link from Karolina, which is sitting somewhere here. Raise your hand. That's she. It's a well-researched piece. Of course, I can't read Lithuanian, but judging from the footnote, it's a serious work. Of course, now we have moved into a totally different kind of historical period. We all know what happened after the Second World War. Europe was divided. Finland was part of the West, although constantly threatened by Soviet Union. And of course, your country as Estonia and Latvia fell behind the Iron Curtain. For a while there was no contact, but slowly in the late 50s and 60s, you know, especially during the Khrushchev kind of warm weather period before Brezhnev, there was, you know, more and more kind of influx from, you know, more kind of dialogue between East and West. And now, of course, again, Finland acted after the Second World War as a kind of minor, not actually a minor, a center, yes. Because of the grand oeuvre of Alvar Aalto, who dominated the scene like a king. But also Arne Ervi. It was urbanism, single buildings, design, product design, the famous Finnish design. So the kind of form culture and the culture of environment has never been on that level, and never since that, than it was in Finland in the 1950s. It's incredible the quality, because buildings and things were still crafted. They were not industrial production. They were modern, but they were crafted. And that's a kind of very juicy combination. So there's Arne, which is starting to become kind of signature thing around the neck. This is Tapiola, which is, has been destroyed basically after this because it's built more and more and more and more and more buildings, so it's kind of lost its kind of light airiness to a certain degree. But it was very famous in the 50s and 60s, you know. Architecture tourists can very well send this kind of miracle of, you know, high class, you know, high quality living, suburban living, combining nature, water, the forests, the sea, and the buildings. And this is from Vilnius, I expect. As I have want to stress, this is not my invention. It comes from Andrea Mathis' article. So I'm not trying to steal her ideas, but it comes from her. And also, not only Finland, but also Sweden, especially the architecture of Uno Oren, the suburb of Vällingby, they were kind of great topics for discussion and emulation in Lithuania at that time. And also what was good in this thing, why? Because, you know, this thing, the architecture of Alvarado and Ervi and many others was seen as a kind of regional mixture of national history, modern ideas, the well-being of people, the other aspect of society. That's the kind of positive values. They were not politically Western, as for example American architecture as a model would have been. But it was possible even here to use them as sources for inspiration, because it was not like being pro-Western, because of the regional aspect and the kind of biomorphosis of nature and building and so on. So it's kind of harmless for the architects and the builders to emulate these Scandinavian and Finnish models. Because, you know, politics were everywhere. So, you know. This one here. And then the last case. Of course, you all know what this is. I was taken there last spring by Carolina, and I was like, what? I think it's a great building. And of course, the architect, which whose name I was already once able to pronounce, Vytautas Čekanauskas, nobody loves it. And some other designed it, and you know the function, it was the kind of composer's house, concert hall, and meeting hall, with some whole kind of suburb or row houses around. And here, of course, as also Dremates stresses, it's not copying Finnish models, but basically, yes, you can see certain details and certain sensitivity to materials that absolutely have been inspired by his visit to Aalto Studio, his Sanatsava Town Hall, Jyväskylä University, all those great Aalto buildings from the 1950s. Like here, the kind of the brick wall and the use of light, I think it's a great building. And of course, what I also like is that you could never be able to do a staircase without a railing anymore. It's, I like it. It's got much more area that way. In Finland there would be a kind of balance like this. And here again from her article, on the right hand side, the famous lecture hall of the Viborg Library by Aalto from 1935. Which has this kind of acoustic reasonings, but the main reason of course aesthetic, but who cares? And now the building has been restored. It is as it was built in 1935. It's great. And this is interior from the composer's house. Again with the acoustic reasoning, but at least this beautiful, you know, aesthetically immensely pleasing mixture of materials and form. And in the Sanatsalo Town Hall, just as an example, okay, with these two people roof. And inside a kind of subtle use of exposed brick, as we saw in the interior wall of the composer's house. Not copied, we've been inspired by it. You couldn't copy out of it because you get caught immediately. And then there are these row houses around the, yeah, that's the composer house there. And the row houses, when I went there with Carolina, I was something that I have seen this before. Where? Of course, in Tapiola. This is a row house by Kaija and Heikki Siren from the mid-1950s, which, of course, the Lithuanian architects saw when they walked around, photographed when they walked around Tapiola. I'm not saying this is they copied this, but you know there are immense similarities, the kind of sizing and the use of materials, the kind of concrete or brick bearing walls and then the wooden parts in between. And as it looks today, these are Carolina's pictures. Well preserved, and that's great. I mean, I was so surprised to see them in this kind of almost mint condition. The same row houses. And again. Now, the last but not the least. This has nothing to do with Finland. I will end with an example of, again, going back to the center of Peritani province. Now, if you think about 1960s and early 70s, this was designed in 1971, and the architect is Klomauskas, yes, the sports hall, which everybody of you knows. So, of course, the ability to know what was happening in the world was, was rapidly going forward. There was more and more journals. Of course, I don't know how much material the architects in Lithuania had to, in their use in 1971, I don't know. What were the sources for information? But anyway, the architecture scene has become global. With several nominating centers like the US, even Tokyo, the work of Niemeyer in Brazil, and many, many other examples. So again, this game of peripheries and provinces and centers had changed. And I'm just comparing this to a couple of buildings. I'm not saying that they were copying them, but of course one has to think about the Olympic architecture of the Tokyo Olympics in 1964 by Kenzo Tange and the metabolists. Or the architecture of Corbeau in Chandigarh. The Beton Rule. Or the kind of concrete fantasies of Eero Saarinen, again of him. This TWA airport terminal in JFK in New York. And this one, the last picture. The Dulles Airport in Washington by Saarinen from the early 60s. Thank you.